Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Everton Fan Focus podcast. Your host today is myself, Mark Finnegan, and Sean Rothwell, who's joining us for the first time.
You all right, Mark?
Welcome to the Fan Focus podcast, Sean. How's the fume and how's the mood after Sunday's result?
It's the first time in a while that I remember what fume feels like, to be honest. Probably since the Liverpool game before Christmas. So it's a bit of a horrible memory, really, the fume coming back. And I think the problem with it is the probably the manner that we lost the game rather than the actual result. Because, to be fair, I think everybody acknowledged that Sunday probably was one of, if not the hardest game that we had left in this season. And Tottenham have had a fantastic home record. I think it's 9 or 10 in a row that they've won at home. So it was always going to be tough. But to go there, to score two goals, is the hard part. We've generally been pretty good in the last 2 or 3 months defensively. So to go there and concede three goals in the manner that we did, in all honesty, I know everyone was saying Tottenham played fantastically well, and they were relatively impressive, certainly for 20 minutes in the first half. They didn't really have to work for any of those three goals. It was three schoolboy mistakes, really. And yet, our goal, our first goal, Lukaku's goal, was a mistake by them. Our second goal probably wasn't too much of a mistake, but it is just disappointing to go there and score two and come away with nothing, particularly given how much of a sort of kick that would have given us going on for the next few games, and potentially looking like we could have caught Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, having got beat by Liverpool. Just loses a little bit of momentum, doesn't it? But good thing is, I suppose, we've got two home games coming up where we can put that right.
There you go, we'll bring it to a close. We always start these and someone always goes off on a rant and then you've said everything you've got to say. But no, I completely hear you. And even getting a point there on Sunday would have carried the momentum on. Because obviously United dropped points, West Brom got beat. So that was a real chance. I'm not saying I expected us to go there and beat Tottenham, but I echo everything that you've just said in the fact that probably the team selection, the manner in which we went about the game, formation, certain players being included, and then the goals that we conceded. It was just 3-2 was flattering, to be honest. Although we scored two goals, it wasn't a close fought game, I wouldn't say. Tottenham were good, but I thought Everton made them look even better.
Yeah, definitely, because we sort of played into their hands in a way, and I think it's probably a bit of a legacy issue, isn't it? The sort of team selections that we put up against these sides, particularly away from home, and we've done it for, how long, when did Moyes come? Sort of 15, 16 years ago now, that we've gone to White Hart Lane, we've gone to Anfield, we've gone to Old Trafford to not get beat. I think that's how we set up. And you can understand that, really, setting up that way, because ultimately, as you said, a draw would have kept the momentum going. It wouldn't have been a bad result at all, especially given a couple of other results. But it's not really showing the ambition that ultimately, maybe in a season's time, you'd like us to show when you go into these places. And sometimes you do get that feeling that maybe you'd rather go there and try and win and get beat 3-0 than go there and try and not get beat.
And just still match them.
And still concede three goals.
And I think, I mean, we'll look at the game in more detail in a second, but what you've said there about Moyes, and Moyes always said, like, knife to a gunfight mentality, but it's kind of been on the field and off the field for a while, whereas off the field now, it's not. It's a lot more. There's a lot more statement there. And yeah, we've still got a long way to go on the pitch, but sides have gone to these top six grounds or top six we're calling them the top six now, aren't we? Sides have gone there and got results, but Everton never seemed to do it. Even just pick up a snide 1-0. Yeah, the only one that stands out is the 1-0 under Martinez at Old Trafford when we were on a crest of a wave. But United were poor. A poor side that year, and have probably been trying to build since. We got a point at Arsenal and everyone thought it was fantastic. Probably in the context, yeah, because we finished fifth that year and Martinez has us really playing. But I'd love us to just go somewhere and make a statement. We came mightily close to Chelsea the other year, didn't we? But ended up drawing 3-3.
Yep.
Just a result like that can really can catalyst not only the current season, but the seasons ahead and the mentality then going to them grounds in the future. But, again, we're talking about a defeat at one of those grounds. So, annoying, really, especially after going so long unbeaten.
It is, and there has got to become a time where we do go to one of these stadiums and we just go there and we play to win and we see what happens.
Starting at Anfield,
absolutely, that's the one. I mean, to be fair, I think that's the one that every Evertonian still sort of dreads and probably still does feel like it is a knife to a gunfight, to be fair. Having been, 18 years now since we won there. But, you know, they're not up to much. That is the next big one. We have got to go to that and really show something and not go for a point. There's no honour, really, in going for a point, especially when you don't get it afterwards. You just sort of feel a little bit shortchanged, really. And I know if the tactics would have worked and playing the three deep midfielders would have made us come away with a point, then probably we'd be sat here saying, isn't Koeman a tactical genius? And it's good the way we can adapt to every challenge. But, as I say, you just look a little bit soft when you do it and you still concede three goals and you don't play well. And everybody does look a little bit lost and unfamiliar in the formation that we've got. And I suppose the other thing that's maybe a bit of an issue for me in doing it is we were 9 games unbeaten. I know we've not 100% kept an unchanged team in that time, but we had just come off a really, really comfortable win against Sunderland. Was there a massive need to change it? I'm not sure there was. And I sort of remember, I think it was 2 years ago in Martinez's second season, we got dismantled a bit by Tottenham at White Hart Lane. And you know, Gareth Barry stunk the place out then 2 years ago. I think it was him dwelling on the ball where we conceded the goal. And another 2 years down the line now, still being picked.
And I think he's been out of the side, Barry, and then to put him back in against such a high class opponent at a fast paced team who like to attack, full of energy, players with loads of pace and creativity, to put him back in there was just like a lamb to the slaughter in reality.
Really?
You can pack that midfield as much as you can, but Gareth Barry didn't know what day it was. And you know, I know we're singling him out there, but collectively I thought we all looked a bit off the pace and a bit disorganised. As you say, we didn't really know who was playing where. Lukaku was so isolated. Ross Barkley, for me, was the only one who looked bothered. So when the team was picked, I saw a lot of comments on Twitter, people umming and ahhing, but you know, often when Evertonians do that, they like to be proven wrong and a result follows, but they were proven right on this occasion.
It's always gutting when you're proved right, isn't it? As you say, it is brilliant to be proved wrong, and then you can sit there and give the manager all the credit in the world. But yeah, I think that is the key one that everyone's taken from that game is the Gareth Barry selection. You know, even if we wanted to go in that three deep midfielders formation, we did have another option in James McCarthy, who obviously came on later on. And, you know, he didn't change a great deal, but maybe if we would have gone that way from the start, at least maybe, you know, he brings a little bit of a different dimension. He's faster. He's not as defensively minded. He can play the defensive role, but he's not as defensively minded. And barring the couple of little niggles he's had, he was in not bad form. I think he was starting to change a few people's minds.
Everton rejected bids for him, didn't he? And Koeman obviously wants to keep him.
He's been quite vocal about that, more vocal than more or less anyone else, really, hasn't he?
But I know people probably would have scratched their heads if he would have threw McCarthy in from the off. But for me, like, they've played three at the back, you know, Holgate's been in there, most notably the win against Southampton, the win against Manchester City. It was a three at the back, or five at the back if you want to include Coleman and Baines. It's more like a 3-5-2. Sorry, a 3-5... What is it? 3-5-1-1 or whatever it is.
Calculated
out
there.
But that's worked previously against some decent opposition, obviously most notably against Manchester City. Again, against Sunderland, I highlighted the midfield as a key area. Barkley, Garner, Schneiderlin all played really well. Tom Davis, they all sort of interlinked. Garner especially hasn't had the best of times of late since coming back from Africa, but he ran the show, didn't he? Schneiderlin got man of the match. We've now gone in, we've threw Gareth Barry into the mix there. I thought Tom Davis didn't have the best of times. Garner didn't really have a clue on Saturday. Schneiderlin did okay. Ross Barkley was the one who sort of wanted to make a difference in that team. And also, I found, looking at the way Tottenham was set up, when Harry Kane wants to get in the positions, or get in the positions, he has players around him, he'll bomb on, Eriksen's, Ali's, you know, Dembele's there pulling the strings. Whereas when Lukaku's anywhere near the ball, we've got no one within 30 yards of him. He was fed on scraps all day, but... it was probably a lively, evenly matched opening to the game, but to go behind in the manner we did, first goal was poor, wasn't it? And that probably just epitomises what we've just summed up then.
Yeah, I mean, the first goal, I mean, I've heard people blame sort of three different sources, whether it was Garner, whether it was Barry. For me, it was the goalie, in all honesty. Whilst I think Joel's been a bit of a revelation in the last 3 months, for the most part, that doesn't mean that he can't make a mistake, and I do think that he did make a mistake. I think that could have been pushed around the post. Maybe he was going one way and the ball went the other, perhaps, I don't know. But for me, he was slow, and he should have got that ball, notwithstanding. Yeah, Garner and Barry should have closed him down. But I mean, you'd think it was, you know, goal of the season, the way everyone was carrying on. But for me, that... it was a good strike. But
there was elements of our own undoing with that, though, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Garner was at fault in terms of the position, in terms of closing down. I think Barry's body language, the way he's running away from the ball, with his back to Harry Kane, did not look good on himself. You don't give Harry Kane that much time and space on the ball. He's a class striker, absolute quality striker. He'll punish you from whatever distance, Harry Kane. And then the keeper, yeah, I completely agree. He's that tall, he should have saved that with his head.
Yeah.
And I know, in terms of Robles, he's done well. A lot of people have been saying, oh, that's why we still need to sign a keeper. I'm still full of praise for Robles since he's come into the side. And he's done well, but I've still openly said we do need a younger, more hungry, a better keeper. But I'm not, as I say, he is still susceptible to a mistake. But it takes nothing away from the fact that Joe Robles has done really well in the past couple of months.
He's been outstanding. And there's something about him. I think he could be like your sort of your Brian Oviedo type cult figure, because he seems to get it, doesn't he? I think he loves being at Everton. He loves the fans. He wants to do well. You know, he's tweeting and putting on Instagram about how many clean sheets he's had. He's obviously taken pride in his performances. So yeah, by all means, we'll grant him a mistake. That's fine. Everybody makes a mistake, and obviously you're punished more when you're a goalie and you make a mistake than you are when you're Romelu Lukaku and you make a mistake. And you probably don't have as much opportunity to make amends for it. But you know, we made a good save shortly after that when Harry Kane tried to dink it over him, and he stood tall, blocked that. So yeah, you know, it was a mistake. Put it down to experience and move on. The thing that probably disappointed me as much as anything was the second goal, because, and again, there's a slight element of blame to the goalie, albeit when rolling that ball out, Morgan Schneiderlin was asking for it. But it's something that we did for certainly the last 2 years under Martinez, which just killed me, was that ridiculous straight ball out to a midfielder, generally Gareth Barry, with his face to goal, and you were immediately putting yourself under pressure. The number of times in the last 2.5 seasons we've got away with it just And it's just really frustrating that that crept back in to our play on Sunday. And I don't really know where that came from, because we haven't done it for all season. I've not seen Joel do that in the 2 or 3 months that he was there, but they kept doing it. And it was sort of annoying, because watching the coverage on Sky, you'd see Joel get the ball, whether it be a goal kick, whether the ball had just come to him in normal play, and they'd cut to a replay of something, and by the time that they'd gone back to normal play, because he'd rolled it out, we'd lost it already, because Tottenham were playing such a high line. And I really don't know where that crept back in from, because we haven't seen it for 6 months, and it's one thing that's done my head in for 2 years.
But to do that against a high pressing,
full
of energy, talented team like Tottenham at White Hart Lane,
yeah,
is even more of a mistake. And that's why Baines and Coleman suffered. I thought Ashley Williams was exploited massively. He looked like he looked well out of his depth on Saturday, Ashley Williams. Funes Mori, give me a bloody heart attack every time the ball goes near him. Again, he's a bit of a, he can be a bit of a cult figure, maybe some people like the fact that he's a bit different, and he's a bit of a, it's a bit of a loose cannon, let's be honest. I mean, he likes his barbecues, but I remember when he made his debut, was it in the derby, went 1-1 when Rodgers got sacked, remember? And I remember thinking, he's a Rolls Royce. He got his head on everything that day. Since then, he's probably only had 2 or 3 games of that high performance in terms of, you know, comparisons. A lot of the time, he can be quite erratic. I thought a lot of them were exploited, so completely see what you mean. There was no space. It was like the pitch was too small for Everton on Saturday.
Yeah.
Sunday, sorry. And Tottenham basically just basically exposed that. And I thought, even though it was an evenly matched, lively encounter up until Harry Kane scored, as soon as that first goal went in, that was it. We were beaten.
Yeah.
Second goal just added, you know, salt to the wound. And from then on in, even when we got the goal back in Lukaku, we made changes in the second half. We just didn't threaten enough. They always were one, you know, 30 yards ahead of us up the pitch. The isolation of Lukaku, the lack of actually being able to put two passes together at times, it did look like a different Everton from what we've seen probably since that Arsenal win in December.
Yeah, and everyone was going on about before the game when they saw the team selection about how crowded the midfield was going to be. And I think the problem was we crowded it for ourselves because of the three that we put there. But yeah, going back to Funes Mori, I mean, sometimes he's got bad 50p shaped feet. Some of them balls are just, I mean, they're 30 or 40 yards away from where they're meant to go. You know, that's like me playing golf. It's absolutely nowhere near. So I think that Koeman is going to look at him in the summer, and I would be very surprised if he was starting games for Everton next season. And but you're right about Ashley Williams. Ashley Williams looked about 73 on Sunday. He looked absolutely knackered.
But even towards the end, 86, 87 minutes, was it 2-1 down still at then? He was just giving away these stupid fouls, fouls you'd expect like an half fella to give away in Sunday League. And I was thinking, Williams, we're trying to get an equaliser here. All it takes is a punt upfield. Keep the ball in our possession. And it showed with the Lukaku goal, we can put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah.
We obviously, was it Vertonghen who fell over for that?
Yeah.
And he didn't put a foot wrong all day, to be honest. A Vertonghen and a Alderweireld, maybe that's the sort of defensive partnership that we should be looking at next season. Maybe a little bit younger, but I agree with you. I can't see Funes Mori having a long-term, regular future at Everton. He may hang around for a couple of years. Ashley Williams, don't get me wrong, I was made up with the signing, but he probably hasn't reached the levels that we'd expect.
No.
He's being exploited at times. And there was that element later on. Also, Funes Mori, his distribution. Now, there was another pass, I don't know if people remember when they were watching the game, but he tried to give it to Baines or someone on the left-hand side towards the end. And just put it out of play. So I had the computer on in ours watching some dodgy stream, and then he put the laptop through the window.
I'm surprised he didn't talk the way. The ball was going to
win. I know, it was frustrating, but when you've got the element of a keeper making a mistake, two centre-halves being exploited, not being able to put two passes together, your full-backs being squeezed to death, plus your midfielders like Gareth Barry, who was basically a passenger all day, then Tottenham are going to work on that.
Yeah.
And they did, to huge effect. And, you know, by all means, they deserved 3 points.
there's no doubt that they deserve the 3 points, and sometimes you get beaten by a better team, and you just have to accept that. And
it's not nice to see your side helping them on the way to that.
That's the difference. It's the fact that we gifted them 3 goals, and like you were saying, I think it was Ashley Williams who gave the free kick away for the third goal.
It was, stupidly.
It was just the most nothing foul in a silly position when they didn't even have a chance of attacking us. To concede like from such a nothing free kick where everyone just for some reason stays still, I imagine probably that goal is perhaps the one that Ronald Koeman will be most disappointed about, because we'd got the goal back from Lukaku, and if anything in those 10 minutes before that we possibly looked like the side who was going to get the next goal without creating a great deal, in all fairness. I would have put my money more on us getting the goal than Tottenham. So to just gift them it to kill the game off, you know, it was a disappointing feeling, and there just seemed to be a bit of a lack of effort in defence in trying to prevent that goal. You know, nowhere near him.
I think it sums up the 90 minutes, though, didn't it? 94 minutes as a whole. Stupid foul given away. Easy punt, Harry Winks, I think it was, put it through to Dele Alli, and a simple tap, yeah, and a stupid celebration past Robles, and it killed it. I thought when Lukaku scored, which was a great finish, by the way, mm-hmm, I thought, right, he looks, come on, get the ball back up, let's have a go. And I thought between him and Barkley, we could have maybe nicked something, mm-hmm, bit of false hope maybe with 9 minutes left, but that just killed it, and it sums up the performance overall. But as I say, if we've been a bit shaky like that in recent months, it may not have been more of a surprise, the manner in losing that. But because we've kind of got our act together, mm-hmm, across the team, brought a couple of players in, looked a more solid unit, a more organised unit, to then go and do that against Tottenham just makes it a lot more frustrating. Fair enough, as you said earlier, going to Tottenham, the 27 points out of 27 points in the last 9 at home, it's going to be tough for anyone. There's not a lot of sides who go there and at least get a point. But the way Everton are now, we should be going to places and expecting at least a point. If we want to kick on next season, we should be setting them the bar now and trying to nick a few sort of results that will enhance our status on the pitch. We know we're enhancing our status off the pitch. But, you know, we have a real opportunity now to get back to winning ways with 2 home games as well. So you've got to have a bit of perspective amongst it all, haven't you?
You have, and you know, I'm sure Ronald Koeman knows there's things he could have done differently. He probably would look back on it and say maybe he got the first team starting 11 selection wrong. Should he have made changes at half time like he has done in the past? Definitely. And he probably again regrets not doing that straight away, because, you know, to be fair, until the last half dozen games, we've been a very, very much a 45 minute team all season. We've had a lot of terrible first halves and only come alive in the second half. And I was sat there at half time thinking, we're 1-0 down, we've been as bad as we can be, still something in this for us. And to not see the change probably put a bit of a dampener on expectations for the second half. And to be fair, it never really changed, even when we did make changes later on. Maybe that was a little bit too late. Tottenham had got their second goal by then, and you're 2-0 down, you're facing an uphill battle. But, you know, credit to them for at least getting one back. And like, we're being quite negative because we haven't had much opportunity to do so in the last 3 months. And so it's all been stored up, and we're quite negative in general, Evertonians, really. So it's got to creep out somewhere. But you know, there were some positives in there as well. And you mentioned that Ross Barkley was probably one of our biggest threats, and like, I've been one of his biggest critics, if anyone looks at my Twitter going back a few months. You know,
you're not the only one, to be fair.
For me, he was stinking the place out week after week. And you know, Ronald Koeman's had a couple of words with him. He's dropped them a couple of times, but to be fair to the lad, since Christmas, he's been probably up with Lukaku. He's probably been the best player, and I thought he was our best player easily on Sunday. I thought he got a good positions, created a couple of chances, retained the ball at the moment, that he's retaining it better than he ever has done, because that's been one of his biggest weaknesses is retaining the ball and decision making. But he just looks much more composed, and I don't know, people are saying like the formations change. It positions only change very, very slightly. But it does just show you how a slight change of emphasis, maybe in terms of position, maybe in terms of the pressure on him with Davis and Luckman coming in, has just completely changed his game. And, you know, he looked back to the Ross Barkley that I think every Evertonian was desperate for him to be. Because I think there was some Evertonians getting frustrated with other Evertonians thinking that like they didn't want him to do well. But I think ultimately everyone was just that desperate for him to do well. You know, a local lad who is an Evertonian and always has been, wants to do well, getting all the hype. We want him to be as good as everyone wants him to be. And I'm glad that that's happened because everyone is behind him. It's just that some people were more willing to say that, you know, if he's not playing well, he shouldn't be in the team, regardless of anything else, any hype that's around him. But, you know, he's proven the critics, myself included, wrong now, and long may that continue.
Yeah, and I agree with all of that, to be honest, and I've been outspoken towards him. I think maybe since he started growing his hair.
Mate, that's the difference.
He's just got better and better. He stopped getting his ma to give him a skinhead. But it's like he's come out of a shell, and someone's had a word with him, probably Koeman and his staff, and said, look lad, you need to enjoy your football because you've got it. And I do think that he's shown a real assurance and maturity. And if he carries on this curve, and it's an upward curve, he can be an hell of a player for Everton. And that, I think that's probably part of the frustration, as you say. We all want to see him do well. We never got the chance to see Wayne Rooney do well. Jack Rodwell never lived up to the hype. Neither did, you know, others like Jose Baxter and players who've come through. Let's be honest, Ross Barkley's the man, isn't he? He's the one who's been there for years. Remember Phil Neville talking about him many years ago. And I think people see him as the talisman for the team, and I think he's potentially growing into that. Just needed maybe a bit of an arm around him, or a kick up the bum, and bit of constructive criticism, and take it on board and take it on the chin, and he seems to have done that. And he was definitely a positive from Saturday, yeah, and a positive from the past few months. And yeah, fair play to the lad, and long may continue. With the chance of West Brom and Hull at home as well, he can dominate both of them sides, Ross Barkley, if he wants to. He's got the tools to do it. Sunday he wanted the ball, he was hungry to get us forward. I do feel on Sunday, if we would have kept the same team as Sunderland, but we probably change Lukman for maybe Morales. I'm not Morales' big fan, but Lukman had a poor game against Sunderland. He's come into the side, he's still very young. Again, an arm round him probably has happened in the past few weeks. I think we would have started Morales, more of an outlet up there with Lukaku. Then Lukaku wouldn't have been fed on scraps all day, and the team wouldn't have relied on Ross Barkley to try and come up with a moment of magic. Because every time Barkley had the ball, there's two men on him. There's no one else around him, and it was frustrating, but that takes nothing away from the fact that we're trying to make something positive from a relatively negative podcast here. But it was good. And another positive for me was, I know it didn't mean anything in terms of the outcome of the result, but Lukaku has surpassed Duncan Ferguson's record now at 61 Premier League goals. And that finish with his right foot epitomises what Lukaku can do if you give him the chances. But on Sunday was another example of us not giving him any chances.
That's it. He had
nothing to work with.
There was one chance and one goal, which is basically all you can ask for a striker. And yeah, momentous goal for Lukaku. Good right-footed finish. You know, only very small area of the goal to aim for against a decent keeper. You know, great finish. And obviously, we hopefully had some news today filtering through from the official Everton source that is Jim White.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That he's signing a new 5-year deal before the end of the week, and we're told that it's just waiting for Bill Kenwright to sign the contract. I didn't know that Bill Kenwright still signed them. But if that's the case, then hopefully Bill's not too busy on the West End this week and he can put pen to paper and make that official.
He still always has to put his name to something, Kenwright, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, I'm probably not as bitter towards Bill Kenwright as most Evertonians, but
some. I wouldn't say most. You'll end up people saying that we're slandering here, but just say me.
Just you, Mark. But no, I think you know it's only a fantastic bit of news for the club, and you know ultimately, as we know, contracts don't necessarily mean anything. It does mean that we've got a little bit more control over Romelu Lukaku as an asset, and that if he does ultimately want to move on, whether that's this summer, whether that's next summer, or whether it's hopefully in a number of years' time, at least we can bank that little bit of money for him and potentially get a replacement. Do you know what? If a replacement even exists, because right now, you're looking at him, Harry Kane and Aguero possibly as the top three in the league. You know, out of those, personally, I would rather have Lukaku because of his age and just because of how I think that he can on his day. He can create goals. I don't think, like Harry Kane, for instance, he's a goal scorer. He's probably a better goal scorer than Lukaku, in all honesty. But Harry Kane needs the team around him. He needs someone to create the goal for him. And, you know, he probably won't miss. But Lukaku's got that little bit of drive in him to create the goals himself, even looking back at Sunderland, picking the ball up on the halfway line. Could you imagine Harry Kane running and scoring from there? I can't personally, whereas Lukaku can do that. Looking back at his goal against
Chelsea at home in the Cup was classic. Yeah, Lukaku, one of the best goals he's ever scored, but synonymous of what he can bring. He can turn a game on its head.
Yeah, that's it. He's got the world at his feet, and hopefully Everton is going to be a good enough proposition for him to fulfil all of his ambitions, which he seems to remember every time he goes away to Belgium.
Well, the Belgians love to do that, don't they? But I mean, he tweeted something about the Champions League where reputations are built. Well, and a lot of people say, oh, you know, he needs to channel his enthusiasm for the Champions League in other ways. But for me, the lad's ambitious, and he wants to be ambitious with Everton. And I think, in my heart of hearts, he'll sign a new deal and he'll give Everton one more season. He'll see what we do in the summer, and Jim White, you know, the spokesperson, is alluding to the fact that Everton are going to buy in 4 top players this summer. Yeah. If they go and do that with Lukaku at the forefront of the attack, there's no reason why we couldn't get in the Champions League next season. And if we get there, he'll stay. Mm. But if we don't, and it's 6th, 7th, 5th even, he may look to move on. But you know what? Lukaku would have given us 5-year service by then and scored a shed load of goals, broke all sorts of records. Fair play to the lad. Every player has his time scale, and I'm surprised he hasn't left sooner, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
I just don't know where he'd go. I don't know what team would get him. And as you said before, you named Kane, Aguero, Diego Costa's another one. All the top sides have top strikers, don't they, already?
Yeah, that's it. And I think, you know, if he did sign the new contract, which it looks like he's going to, and obviously stays with us for the rest of this season and potentially next season, I don't think that if we didn't succeed next season that any Evertonian would really begrudge him leaving at that point to move to a club who were in the Champions League, and I think he'd just have to go with our blessing. And like you said, he's probably going to have scored a ton of goals. He's been a really good servant to the club. Talking like he's going already, but you know,
you'd think he's about to sign a new deal.
Yeah.
That's football, though, isn't it? It's modern football,
yeah.
Isn't it?
So. And to be fair, he's been reliable as well. That's the other thing. You know, he's been with us a good couple of years now, and you know, this season it's been absolutely essential that he's been reliable, because our backups are Enna Valencia and Aruna Kone. I mean, and the thought of that just fills me with dread.
But even when we were plummeting under Martinez, and I say plummeting, there's times when we went to 13th, 14th in the league and we were looking over our shoulder desperately. He managed to still drag goals. Do you know, remember the season when we done poor in the league, but he smashed it in Europe and he scored all sorts of goals then. He has always got goals, and he always divides opinion, Lukaku. But good players do, similarly to Ross Barkley, similarly to John Stones. Do you know what I mean? Good players do divide opinion. Excuse me, but let's hope he pens this new deal. I'm pretty certain now that Jim White said it that it's going to happen, and now that Jim White said we're signing four top players in the summer, I'm pretty certain that's going to happen as well.
That's got to happen now, hasn't it? He's Farhad's right hand man, isn't he, Jim White?
But it's clever though, isn't it? I mean, Jim White to get another person who divides opinion, but and you know, some of the media sources he works for divide opinion, but Mashiri knows he's a voice, he's a recognised person, and his voice is a lot louder than the Liverpool Echo, so to speak, you know. And the reach of TalkSport and Sky and wherever Jim White goes, even if it's just on his Twitter account, it's clever what Mashiri's doing, and he has a trust there, a relationship with him, and he releases news through him, and it may not be ideal for a lot of people, but for me, Jim White's only told us good news so far, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, to be fair, he has. He does seem to be getting the positive sound bites, but even looking back a number of months ago to the humiliation at Stamford Bridge, that was a couple of days later. In fact, it was the Monday or Tuesday after that defeat that Farhad Mashiri gave one of his only interviews to Jim White on TalkSport, and to be fair, that one, I suppose, wasn't positive coming on the back of that defeat. Again, it's a bit weird that that's where he chose to go. But
he saw him at that game though, didn't he?
Yeah,
he saw him and he agreed to go on.
But clearly there's some sort of relationship there, and who knows, maybe that's where the broadcasting day last Tuesday at USM Finch Farm came from.
I think it definitely was, yeah. And I think again, that was we spoke on the podcast the other week with the lads about that, and about how I think it was a masterstroke. And I saw fans of other clubs saying real eye opener to Everton Football Club, what Sky done today. And it was a real eye opener for even Evertonians, and Everton in the community was one side of it, but they'd done interviews with that many different people and showed all the good aspects of the club. Again, it's clever for me, and it's Mashiri and his team are behind these things. So I think ultimately it's just all leading to the fact that Jim White's going to be the stadium announcer at the King Bramley Moor. I nearly said King's Dock then.
Don't open up them
wounds. Bramley Moor, yeah. But there's talk of that being announced as well in the coming weeks. And I know we probably said the same in January, but there is excitement off the field, isn't there?
There is.
If we can get Lukaku pinned to the new deal, get back to winning ways against West Brom and Hull, we need to, because then we've got Liverpool, Arsenal and United, I think, away from home. Not consecutively, I hope. But it'll be tough, won't it? There's no easy games. I know it's cliche, but there's no easy games. But there's still a lot of games left to really try and chase United. If not, seventh place, Europe.
Seventh place, you couldn't knock it at the start of the season, really, could you? On the back of two really, really demoralising 11th place finishes. And, you know, in all honesty, those 11th place finishes probably flattered us, because the last two seasons, after a fantastic first season for Martinez, the last two seasons were absolutely horrendous. Worst football I think most of us have ever seen or witnessed or endured is probably the best way of describing it. So 7th place, I don't think anyone will knock that. You know, potentially it could be better. Let's see. Like you say, we've got to go to Old Trafford, we've got to go to Anfield, and we've got to go to Arsenal on the last day of the season. You know, the way Arsenal are going, who's to say that that won't be a battle for 5th or 6th between us and Arsenal on the last day of the season? You know, they tend to come good and outlast whoever's around them in the battle for fourth. But Arsene Wenger's seemingly indicated that he won't be there next season. Will the players keep playing for him? I'm not convinced he will, in all honesty.
Well, Sanchez, there's all the talk about Sanchez. They're dropping, aren't they? But their performance at Anfield on Saturday reminded me of Everton going to... I'm not going to call Liverpool a bigger side. No way am I going to sit here and say that. But going to sides who are in and around them in the league, they'll go there and they get beat with a whimper, if I'm honest. And I know Everton haven't always done that, but there is echoes of that there. And now they're Champions League every year, and you know they've won silverware in the past few years or whatnot. They're on another level to Everton, shall we say. But their terms of performances and the way they bottle it, it does have echoes with Everton going to those other sides. But you don't know, they're dropping, aren't they? The morale's going to be low. The fans are all going off their heads on YouTube. it'd be great if we could pip them. But, you know, we've got United above us first. And there's is it 5 points still?
5 points.
Five points. They've got a game in hand. So right, let's not forget that. They win that and it's Cairns, isn't it? We're going to finish seventh at the very best. But, you know, we've got that 4 point gap on West Brom now. So if we beat them on Saturday, more or less guarantees European football. We can dust the passport off. We can start chartering planes. We can start touring Europe again, which, don't get me wrong, has been that was a fun memory under Martinez until we crashed out that night, like in Kiev. But it was a good run, wasn't it? And it'd be good to see us back there, as you say, after two consecutive demoralising seasons.
It would be good, and I think we're still reliant on a couple of things going our way for seventh, aren't we, in terms of the FA Cup. Whoever get into the final, but you'd expect a couple of, you know, whoever, Chelsea, Arsenal.
United are playing Chelsea, aren't they?
So you'd expect it to happen, be disappointed if it didn't. And the cup run's probably kept Martinez in a job for longer than maybe he deserved based on the league form. But, you know, we did have some fantastic experiences in Europe, and hopefully maybe this time, going into that with Ronald Koeman, who has got a little bit more experience of European football, which I know Martinez was Spanish, but between him and David Moyes, they didn't really have, in all fairness, and certainly neither of them had a real track record of achievement long term from a trophy perspective, barring one fluke with Wigan. But hopefully we'd be a little bit more intimidating to other teams this time, and I'd like us now to really take these competitions seriously, because that's the one thing in the last, 15 or so years that's been the most disappointing thing. And, you know, every season when Liverpool come across, we get the, it's only been 20 years, 21 years, 22 years since we won a trophy. You know, it's going to be at least 23 by the time we can win one now. I think that next time, regardless of obviously we want to go for Champions League football, we really, really need to go for one of these trophies, whether that is the EFL Cup or whatever it's called now. You know, we've got to go for it, and that's something that I wonder whether there's been enough influence at boardroom level on the managers of the club over the last 15 years to tell them to go for these trophies. Look, you know, we can reel off the number of clubs that have won trophies since we last won one, and you know, some of them, it makes you die inside when you say that, you know, Middlesbrough have won a trophy and Portsmouth have won a trophy since we have, you know, and
Birmingham,
all sorts. You know, and the problem is, we've not even really been close. We got to the final of the FA Cup in, was it 2009 now?
Yeah, about 10.
You know, even that's a long time ago now. So we really do need to give the fans not just the day out, but the success of winning a trophy. And that's got to be the key for next season, is getting that silverware. And then potentially maybe you've even got a bargaining chip with the likes of Lukaku and some of the better players to say, look, even if we don't make Champions League football probably this year and possibly next year, look, we're still a winning side. You can win things with Everton. We can help you realise your ambitions, which at the moment, you're looking back 23 years, and that's just too long. Some of them were, I mean, Tom Davis wasn't born.
Yeah, there's no proof there, is there? There's no proof to say, right, well, we won the League Cup 2 years ago, now we're going to try and win the FA Cup in the next couple of seasons, get back in it. You can talk is cheap, isn't it? Silverware is the thing that players want, and Champions League is what the players want. And they all think it's the promised land, but you know, we got there in 2004, didn't we, and finished fourth, was it 2004, 2005?
Yeah, 2004,
yeah. Unfortunately, crashed out straight away, but that's probably the only, you know, that's the only time, isn't it, the past 20 years that we can say, oh yeah, we've skated with that, got to a final, a couple of semi-finals. But I agree, I mean, look at Southampton, they got all the way to the EFL Cup final, unlucky to get beat in my opinion, but the better side. They didn't do anything special, you know, Claude Puel's come in there, they're having an okay season, Southampton, but they had a real go at that, and it's silverware in February, isn't it? It's silverware.
That's it.
Your season's nowhere near over, and you've got silverware, so that will spur Southampton on, and then they followed it up with a great win the other day. I'm not sure where they'll finish in the league, but it is, that frustrates me, that Norwich game pissed me off, you know, sorry to swear again, but, and then the cup game against Leicester was a nightmare, because I thought we could have a go here, because a lot of sides have crashed out, haven't they? Look at Man U and Chelsea, one of them is going to go out in the next round. Liverpool are out, we know. A lot of top sides are out, and Everton, you know, on the day could beat anyone in a cup game. I'd fancy us more going to one of the bigger sides in a cup game than I would in the league, put it that way.
Definitely.
But yeah, it's frustrating, but that has to be the short-term goal. You know, stop the rot almost, because it is, it's the time that we haven't won a silverware is not getting any shorter. It's getting, as you say, it'll be soon be 23 years, and we have to kick on with progression off the pitch. Needs to come silverware on the pitch. European qualification is okay, but then if you're in something, you need to try and win it.
That's it. And you know, if we look at the fantastic new stuff that's around the stadium, the timelines and that. You know, I'm not saying came fourth in 2005 on there. That's lovely. We want that, but it's not going to go down in history that we scraped fourth at one of the lowest points totals ever to get in the Champions League, in all honesty, and crashed straight back out of it with a little bit of help from Kalina, obviously. But you know, we do need to be doing this, and you know, that to me, that's my biggest issue of the season with Ronald Koeman, is that mistake against Norwich in September or whenever it was, failing in the same way that Martinez and Moyes did before him, in starting a League Cup game with an insufficient team rather than playing the team that will go out and win the game and then resting the players afterwards. Resting players to start with, and by the time you bring the big guns on, the game's gone. And you know, and then we had that sort of sorry state of affairs about Claude and the Stephen Naismith goal against us, and it's almost like an air of resignation amongst our fans that we can't win in a cup game. And you know, that needs to go, in the same way the mentality about going to Tottenham and Anfield and Stamford Bridge or wherever needs to go. There still seems to be that mental block, and it is a legacy issue. It's top to bottom in the club, and that to me is the key thing that we need to broach next. We seem to have got the administrative and financial side of the club on a steady footing now. We're as positive as we've ever been about the future of the club. To me, the next barrier is the mentality one. And it's true amongst fans, but also through everyone at the club, who still, to me, doesn't seem to believe that we can win a competition, or we can go to one of these top six teams and play them at their own game and outdo them. And to be fair, we've not done it, but we can. We do it at home. We can do it.
We can make a statement against anyone at home. We've beat United, we've beat Chelsea, Arsenal. We've beat them at Goodison in the past, you know, whatever, X amount of years. But I agree, we need to go and make a statement. And, you know, just going back to the EFL, changing the team. If you were in the Champions League on a Wednesday night at PSG away, he played the strongest 11 then, wouldn't he?
Exactly.
And he'd play it again on the Saturday or the Sunday at Goodison or wherever we were. There's no reason why people who are paid 80 grand a week can't play two games in a week. if you're in Europe, then the domestic cup competitions, yet you may have to tinker. You may have to weigh up your priorities and whatnot, but I completely agree with what you're saying there about the Norwich game's just one example.
Mm.
You probably name, you know, remember the Swansea game season before, was
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Fulham, we got beat by them in the League Cup. I remember the old gloomy Tuesday nights.
Yeah.
But being a Tuesday night just makes it even more depressing. But it is time to stop the rot. I hope Koeman's the man to do that. And I'm certainly hopeful that Mashiri's the man to do it off the pitch.
Yeah, I think we're all confident that they are, and obviously everyone's willing to give them as much time and support that they need to do that. And, you know, whilst this probably hasn't been the most uplifting podcast that you've ever done.
Well, it's realistic. It's realistic.
And there's still an air of positivity underlying everything that we've said, and it's good that this season we're doing a podcast where we're disappointed that we lost 3-2 at White Hart Lane, haven't been on a run of 9 unbeaten games.
Yeah.
You know, this time last season, do you know what? Half of what I would have been saying wouldn't have been broadcastable. Because the way we were last season,
and it goes on this podcast.
we were just at absolute rock bottom.
Abject. Yeah.
As bad as it gets last season, and you know there was a story, wasn't there, in the Echo of all places, in the last week, that said Mashiri actually wanted to get rid of Martinez a little bit earlier. I think a month earlier than he did. And maybe that's Mashiri's only mistake so far. You know, I said what I thought Koeman's mistake so far had been, but maybe that was Mashiri's, because if he would have got rid of him a month before that, we were still in the semi-final of the FA Cup, and there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that even if we would have had David Unsworth as manager,
Joe Royal, or whoever
it was, we would have beaten Man United on that day, because we played them off the park in the second half after being terrible in the first half, and that's with Martinez as manager. You know, that cup was there for us to win last season, and I think maybe if Mashiri had been there a bit longer at that point, he'd only been there about 8 weeks, I think he would have acted a little bit quicker.
He
would have relieved Martinez of his duties, and there's no doubt in my mind that was ours for the taking last season.
He let it get to the point of which it was untenable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then the awards ceremony and it was announced and all that was cancelled.
It was a bit farcical, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, I agree if he would have been there longer, he didn't want to maybe ruffle the feathers so early. But yeah, I mean, I forgot about that, to be honest, the fact that we got to the semis.
both competitions last season.
I know, it's unbelievable really. But don't get me wrong, since we started these in the midst of the Martinez era, so don't get me wrong, this is nowhere near negative compared to what me and Mark have sat through in the past two years. But they have been largely more positive since the emergence of Koeman and Mashiri, and this season, being a bit up and down this season, but I kind of expected that we've been on the unbeaten run now, and now it's now to build that unbeaten run again. And if that means beating West Brom, Hull, then going and getting a point at Anfield, or beating Liverpool, sorry, I should never say you're going to get a point at Anfield, beating Liverpool and getting a point, you know, I'm trying to get on another 9-game unbeaten run, if there's 9 games left, that is, then so be it. But, you know, each game as it comes, and just a quick word on West Brom.
West Brom, I mean, tough team to beat. You know, you never look forward to playing West Brom from a footballing purist perspective, do you? I mean,
do you remember the 1-0 defeat? Was it last season?
Oh, when we had 74% possession and 20-odd shots, and they had one shot. And that was a hallmark of Martinez's reign, to be honest. Don't anticipate the same sort of outcome this time. Obviously, they're coming off a very disappointing home defeat to a terrible team in Crystal Palace. So you've got to be looking at 3 points. You know, you'd love to see another sort of controlled Sunderland type performance, where it was nice to see that we were the better team for 90 minutes. And that's what I would hope to see on the weekend against West Brom. But it's never easy. They're always going to come and try. They're always going to ping long balls at you. And, you know, looking at the way Funes Mori in particular was at the weekend, you know, we'll just need to be mindful of that, work on that during the week. But surely we've got enough going forward. It's going to be a different setup, isn't it, this time? We're not going to be playing three deep line midfielders. I imagine Morales or Lukman's going to come back in and hopefully give them a little bit of something to think about at the back. And do you know what? It's one of them. You've got to go out and get the first goal against West Brom, because they'll come for a point. If they hit you on the break and get a head goal from a cross,
a centre half probably,
yeah, lash forward, Chris Brunt or something, yeah, you know, then they'll shut up shop and you're screwed then. So you've got to go out, you've got to go and get the first goal, and if we do, you can see it being quite a comfortable result.
Yeah, and you know, the longer it goes on, you get restless, don't you? We have to be patient against the likes of Southampton, Sunderland, amongst others, and eventually grind out the win, and it may be the case on Saturday. But yeah, they're a tough side, aren't they? The likes of Olsen and Dawson, let's be honest, the yard dogs at the back, aren't they? Well, the yard dogs is probably doing them a disservice, but they're rough to play against, but they can also get goals. Matty Phillips is a good player on the right wing. He's got a lot of assists this season. Rondon can get a goal, but he's a bit hit and miss. He's got others there, haven't he? Chris Bunt, McLean, few others that are just like a team full of half decent Premier League players, aren't they?
A team of rejects, really, aren't
they? Yeah,
haven't made the grade other places.
Yeah, and if that's what we're closest to below in the Premier League, then does that just show you the standard of it?
It shows you there's not much below us.
It's not. I know. So we are the best of the rest, really, in theory. But it'll be a tough game. It's never easy. Tony Pulis has always got a cap on, jumping around like a little child. I hate him, to be honest. But I'm expecting 3 points, as you are, and then we've got Hull the week after, and you'd expect the same again then.
Surely that's got to be a home banker. I think they're the last sort of relegation-threatened team, yeah, really, that we've got to face at home.
King Umar comes back to Goodison. He'll be in the hospitality lounges.
Yeah.
He can't play against
us. Can't play, can he? No. Oh, well. So he'll be back with sitting where he was used to sitting at Goodison, really, won't he? Somewhere, yeah, in the...
Not even on the bench,
somewhere
in the stands.
In the main stand, yeah. Watching on. So, you know, hopefully beat West Brom. You'd like to think that Hull was a banker. You've got 6 points out of six. You know, unlikely maybe that Man United and Arsenal win both games as well in front of them. You'd hope to make up a bit of ground. And like Ronald Koeman said this week, see where we're after those two games. If we feel that there's a little bit of a chance of an opening coming up, and whether that means sixth or whether that means fourth, who knows? Anything in that top six this season is an outstanding result compared to where we have been. It takes time to shake off some of the old habits that we've inherited from Martinez's reign. We've got rid of most of the deadwood now, which is good. We're starting to see our Everton back in some of the performances, and hopefully that'll continue on the weekend.
There you go, that's probably a nice way to finish it, that. I think so, and I think a bit of perspective, you know, we've discussed the Tottenham game at length, but that's our only defeat in 10 against the high-flying Tottenham side, who were second in the league, is that right?
Or Manchester, that's right, yeah.
Scoring goals for fun, one of the top scorers in their team, you know, I'm really impressed with Tottenham, to be honest, and I think when he came to Goodison, was it earlier in the season? First game, when it was 1-1, and the season before when it was 1-1, I think Aaron Lennon scored. I remember coming away thinking they had a really good side. To be honest, we should be aspired to be like them. At one point, a few years back, we were on the same level. They've probably financially been better off, but they're the project. They've got a good manager, a good squad of young, hungry players. Spent a few quid getting there. New stadium on the way. You know, second for a long time last season, but blew it in the Champions League. They got in the Champions League this season, and that's where we want to be. We want to be in Tottenham's shoes, and you know, I think we're on the right track to doing that. So all is not lost because of one defeat at White Hart Lane. Still takes nothing away from the fact that it does your head in when Everton get beat, though, doesn't it?
Doesn't it always? another week ruined day. But usually I'm used to getting beat before international break, so at least we haven't got that to ruin it. We can get straight back on the horse and beat West Brom.
Bounce back ability.
This
rules out the claim that we only podcast when we win, which I was banging on yesterday, the other week, about saying, oh yeah, but for the first 2 years of this podcast we hardly won a game, so that's a load of crap anyway. But good to speak to you anyway, Sean, and thanks very much for coming on.
Nice one, thank you, Mark.
I'm sure I'll be back with Mark and a couple of the others next week, probably after the West Brom game or potentially the Hull game, and then you can come on the show again whenever you're next ready.
Love to.
Hopefully discussing a victory next time.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, mate.
Nice
See you later.